Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is Episode 4, the March 26th edition. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the last week and beyond. We hope for this podcast to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most of the citations can be found at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. On our minds this weekend, the possibility of book fairs. This week's podcast is being recorded a little early because the time when I'd normally be recording it, I'll be spending at the Orange County Anarchist Book Fair. This event is holding down its third annual event, and this year the guest speakers include Dana Ward of the Anarchy Archives, Alexander Reed Ross of the Earth First Newswire, and Zoe Zamzusi, which I'm sure I'm slaughtering her name, pronunciation, on a black feminist anarchism. What is the possibility of book fairs? Well, they aren't going to be the cause of the revolution, but they are places where people can meet with anarchists and talk about anarchist ideas without fear of being arrested. They often are events where anarchists dress to impress and do everything in their power to show off their good side. They're often places where you can eat cheaply, find inexpensive anarchist artifacts, books, t-shirts. They're often funny, and the more you know, the funnier they are. What is the possibility of anarchist book fairs? Perhaps this is as far as we go. This is all we're capable of. Smashing windows when we're grumpy, and selling books to each other when we're calm. The book fair has become yet another aspect of North American anarchism to fight over. Some claim that anarchists that devote energy to book fairs, like your esteemed commentator, are somehow less hardcore than those on the street. And it's easy to see anarchists as an anachronism, dedicating energy to books, arguably in an anachronistic way to transmit information in a time when images tell 1,000 words, and I don't even have enough time in my day to check my Instagram feed. What is the possibility of book fairs? It's best stated as the opportunity to meet strangers in a conflict-free zone, to glare at anarcho-liberals under the California sky, and to introduce new, up-and-coming anarchists to the depth of material they'll need to be proficient in as they begin. I love talking about anarchism with people who don't have ideological preconceptions, and this is why I so go to anarchist book fairs. Editorial. Anarchist projects. There are several different types of anarchists, and it can be challenging to keep them straight. The kind of anarchists that Anarchist News tends to devote energy towards are anarchists that work on projects. This is a different type of anarchist than one that works on organizations, or one that just hangs out in a scene. A projectual anarchist organizes their time in terms of bite-sized projects that may be oriented around a bigger project, but just as often have value for their own sake. Oftentimes, our Anarchist News is a series of different people advertising their new project, be it a literature distribution, a new video project, and inviting others, perhaps strangers or close comrades, to join. There is no central committee driving these different projects, and oftentimes it can seem like they're temporary, emphasize outreach more than practical or revolutionary goals, and are a little embarrassing. But that embarrassment is important. My first zine was embarrassing. It was called Kill Your Parents and told a story against the existing order represented by parents from the perspective of a child. Showing it to people taught me the value of expressing an opinion, especially a hostile or a silly one. It gave me a lot of feedback. A lot of the feedback I needed to do future projects, one that were perhaps less silly. Feeling out the texture of doing projects anonymously versus under your own name, or a chosen name, is another aspect central to how to practice an anarchist politics. There is a strong anarchist current that says that the only anarchist activity has no name, no identity, and may even have to speak for itself. This is a hard line in an environment like we have in the US that is so saturated with social media, and where self-representation is considered a hobby for most young people. Another position, from the opposite side of the spectrum, says that the only ethical behavior is stating your position with an open face and by your name. Thereby, you can be held accountable for what you say and can develop relationships with others who feel the way you do. Short-term and discrete anarchist projects are a great way to test out these different ideas about how to do identity, responsibility, and anarchist practice. This week, I was struck by how our anarchist news cycle could be a copy of one from a few years ago or even a decade ago. New media projects, calls for support to distant lands and people, attacks on the existing order, and debates about tactics. Most people might see this as a bad thing. I do not. I see new friends testing out their strength, old-timers experimenting with their mediums and getting better, and the width and breadth of anarchist imagination. These are the things I want my life to be full of. Attack, communication, disagreement, solidarity. What's new this week? Call for international solidarity with Taras Bogay, anarchist and eco-activist, Ukraine. This is from the website 325. On the 19th of February, Taras, an anarchist and eco-activist from Lviv, Ukraine, was assaulted by a group of 20 to 30 drunk neo-Nazis from the right-wing organization Right Sector and the neo-Nazi militia named the Azov Battalion. They attacked Taras after he tried to protect a group of foreigners that the Nazi group was harassing with racial slurs and threats. Despite Taras having been found covered in his own blood, the Lviv Police Department released news about the incident later that day without mentioning Taras's injuries. The news stated, quote, "The police arrested a 27-year-old man that stabbed an 18-year-old teenager in a conflict," end quote. A few days after the incident, a false witness claimed that Taras suddenly attacked the group of innocent people, then cut himself and ran away. While every word of this evidence is a clear lie, it may be considered as proof of Taras's fault in the court. The case clearly demonstrates that Ukraine police have a strong affiliation with far-right organizations. Currently, Taras is being treated for his wounds and is doing rehabilitation from his concussion. He is recovering gradually and his condition is gradually improving. Nevertheless, he is still unable to work. There was an article from a Marxist anarchist dialogue posted by the Black Rose Anarchist Federation. To conclude here, I want to illustrate this conflict very practically in a historical way by analyzing the conflict between Marx, Bakunin, and their followers in the First International, or the IWMA, which was founded in 1864. Their conflict really happened between 1868 and 1872. This conflict really revolves around the incompatibility of the anarchist and proto-syndicalist emphasis on direct action with the Marxist electorist or statist strategy. And just as a background to this conflict, it bears mentioning that Marx and Engels slanderously accused Bakunin of being a czarist agent, first in 1848. These charges were resurrected by Marx's allies in Spain and Germany in the run-ups to the Basel and Hague Congresses of the Internationale. In fact, curiously, this echoes the World Socialist website's denunciations of the anti-fraud protesters against Milo Yiannopoulos at UC Berkeley, condemning them as Asian provocateurs. CrimeThink posted several different articles this week, including a historical article that we'll talk about a little later, and also sort of a how-to article about encryption called Choosing the Proper Tool for the Task. Keep in mind that you don't necessarily need the same tool for every situation. You can choose the right one for each circumstance. There are many variables that could affect what constitutes the correct tool for each situation, and this guide can't possibly cover them all. But knowing a little bit more about what options are available and how they work will help you make better informed decisions. Finally, from insurrection news, this is from Chile, and it's called Pacification and Revolt Concerning International Women's Day and Anarchic Reflection. And this is a nice story as it compares to the Melbourne group that also posted an anarchist perspective on International Women's Day. When we realize the authoritarian and patriarchal nature of present-day society, we understand genders as impositions through which individuals are forced to play certain roles within the network of domination. However, as has happened with other dates that have an origin linked to the conflict with the dominators, March 8th has mainly been transformed into a citizen parade, where the victimistic discourses of the majority of the demonstrators, combined with government attempts to make the struggle for women an element of consensus within the rest of the population. Our struggle is for total liberation, and in it, we fight against any person who tries to impose their will and power, regardless of whether this person is man or woman, rich or poor, white or black, etc. Likewise, our affinity is with every individual who wants to break the chains of authority, regardless of their sex, race, or species. They, referring to the liberals, depend on the police on a day-to-day basis to be able to, well, prosecute. They have a heap of motivation to keep the police officers they work with happy. Below this, we have judges and juries who, the great majority of the time, believe police officers over those who would speak against them. Finally, we have the media, who, more often than not, parrot official police opinions without question, and the consumers of this media that make up the juries. Another article that CrimePink published this week, very active week for them. Cameras everywhere, safety nowhere. Why police body cameras won't make us safer. To quote, police get away with murder, not because we don't see it, but because they're part of a larger system that tells them it's reasonable to kill people. From lawmakers, judges, and prosecutors, to juries, citizens, and the media, every level of society uncritically supports and transmits the police point of view. In this atmosphere, police can murder with no fear of repercussions. The issue is not visibility, but, quote, beyond legal mandates for proof, police are the ones who investigate officers that kill. A notoriously self-protective bunch, they even have a nickname for their code to stick up for each other at all costs. Prosecutors come next. They depend on the police on a day-to-day basis. As a follow-up to the post that we read, I think it was last week, on the CCF, where we read their direct communique, the mainstream media has now discovered this bombing and the communique. And here's what they have to say. An official in Greece's public order ministry said anti-terror investigators had taken charge of the case, which is feared to be a repeat of the Europe-wide CCF campaign more than 6 years ago. Quote, it's very likely that they were sent by the same organization, end quote, he added, saying that there were concerns with the potential distribution of more parcel bombs. It looks like it could be a repeat of 2010. The Hellenic police are now attempting to prevent any more explosive packages being sent out via the Greek Postal Service, which is investigating how they evaded airport security checks in Athens. Greece's Deputy Minister for Public Order, Nikos Taskas, said the Paris bomb was falsely sent in the name of a senior Greek conservative politician, Vasilis Kikilias, and the address of the office that is no longer in use. The device intercepted at the German finance ministry on Wednesday was under the name of another politician from the New Democracy Party, Adonis Georgiadis. Mr. Taskas acknowledged that the incidents would require a reevaluation of procedure in Greece and abroad, adding, clearly they are from the same source, the same organization, the leftovers of the CCF. Greek investigators believe the group is the most likely culprit for both bombings, while a source close to the French inquiry said it was focusing on an anarchist group. ACAB 2017 is a book fair happening in Asheville, North Carolina. Another Carolina anarchist book fair. Get it? And they're calling for presentations. They already have quite a few of them. Building resistance skills, creating resistance through making media, student radical organizing, radical reproductive care, an intro to digital security, building strong movement defense, democracy or freedom, building resilience with herbs, prison letter writing workshop, self-defense for women, strategy, nonviolence ain't what it used to be, a tilted guide to being a defendant. So on March 31st is the deadline to make your own proposal for their book fair, and it appears that their book fair is happening in May 6th. There we go. The blog Uncivilized Animals has come out against the potholes in Portland, Oregon, the pothole anarchist road care group, and I'm going to read a little bit from this blog opinion article. I'm not sure why anarchists would want to create structures to serve the same purpose as state structures. If the state didn't exist, would we really want to invent it? This is what the left does, and it's not an attempt to abolish the state, but rather to become the state. To take on state functions requires state power. The anarchist critique of the state has to go deeper than demonstrating that the state is failing to maintain city infrastructure to an adequate degree. After all, it's not anarchists who promise to make the trains run on time. Remember, the infrastructure does not exist for our benefit, even as we're coerced into making extensive use of it. This is akin to prisoners repairing the bars on their cells, blaming the guards for allowing things to fall into disrepair. But if you really want roads, at least in their modern form, you need something like the state. Consider the fact that Park's successful preliminary action amounted to patching 5 potholes, which they say they are now monitoring to see how they hold up. The monitoring is necessary because Park's cold patching process is technically inferior to the job that would be done by city workers using heated asphalt. There is an issue of scale here that can't be ignored. The city reports fixing 8,000 potholes every year. Anarchy doesn't scale up very well. Finally, in this week's news, there is a brand new anarchist literature distribution that has just announced itself. It is called Underhill, and here is their statement about themselves. Underhill is born of the milieu, not the struggle. Underhill uses the term milieu with only a hint of irony. It's Montreal, fuck off. Underhill is unapologetically North American. Underhill doesn't care about speaking to the disenfranchised. Underhill would rather be your friend than your comrade. Underhill just left in an Uber and doesn't care what you think about it. Underhill knows they shouldn't, but still blocks in a tight hoodie. Underhill would rather rack shit than dumpster it. Underhill will pay $5 for a coffee. Underhill thinks the individual is vast and contains multitudes. Underhill gets what you mean by nihilist, but still thinks you're using it wrong. Underhill cares less about ideas and more about the moments that birth them. Underhill believes the scene is nothing more than the activity of those who compose it. Underhill will rep your projects even if we think they're boring or misguided. Underhill is trying to maintain friendships across vast distances. Underhill knows that irony is a defense mechanism, but Underhill doesn't trust you yet. So you can learn more at underhill.tumblr.com. No surprise. In events, it should be noted that this weekend, Saturday, March the 25th, at the Orange County Anaheim Unitarian Church, there is going to be the 3rd annual Orange County Anarchist Book Fair. Be sure to check that out. And in podcast news, again, podcasts do seem to be an increasingly popular way for people to share their ideas. And so this week, Anarchy Radio, which is a Tuesday radio show that then is transmitted as a podcast, covered quite a few news stories, including World Happiness Day, which, of course, finds the U.S. Decreasing in happiness compared to the rest of the world. The Maldives are sinking. There are new insane tech developments. Stem cell treatments blind 3 people. Selfies kill more in 2015 than shark attacks. School shootings in France. The Final Straw Radio, another radio program that converts to a podcast. Support Jane Waller and Anarchist Thoughts About Tactics at Standing Rock. Jane Waller. In the first segment, we talked to Noel about the case of John A. Waller, young black revolutionary from Oakland, California, who was the only person convicted by a grand jury of property destruction during the 2014 demonstrations in the Bay, following the non-acquittal of Officer Darren Wilson for the murder of Michael Brown. Noel is a supporter of Johnny Waller and believes that Johnny's conviction was a clear case of railroading and racial profiling against a community activist. He is now finishing up a 2-year sentence with 1 year off for good behavior. The interview was held in February of 2017. Johnny is set to be released in coming months. Find out more about the case at rally.org/support Johnny A, spelled J-A-N-Y-E. Annika's observations of the struggle at Standing Rock. In the second segment, Noah, a well-established movement medic, anarchist, and participant in #NoDAPL at Standing Rock, about his experiences there and analysis of how this resistance was organized and how it developed. This interview was recorded days before media saw images of the sacred stone camp burning and have since been disbanded. So many of the modes and lenses and tenses that we employ are not what might be given the current position of the camps. We talk about a wide-ranging set of topics, from what worked in the camps to what the failings were, and how resistance to extraction industries could look like moving. And finally, the ex-Redditor podcast of the Anarchists released its episode 3. They subtitle it Anarcho Potholers and the Decline of Centrist Politics. They cover Portland's anarchist pothole repair crew, analyze the decline of the political center, and the rise of the left and right wings. They discuss the recent Dutch election, union events in Finland, and the dynamics in their election. They also cover the UK Conservative Party, and the rejection of austerity economics, and how much Jeremy Corbyn sucks. Time where we talk about the topic of the week, which this week it was about projects, and I'm here with Ariel. And what were your thoughts on the topic?
I thought it was a great topic. It was amusing to me how many people posted serious responses that I too found I have thought about in the past and talked to people about and have had a desire for. And I'm at an age where I'm thinking a lot about what am I doing with my life and what do I want to do with the amount of time I have left. And so, yeah, I thought it was great and timely for me personally.
So what projects do you have brewing?
Probably it's strange. It's probably most likely the farthest away, but the biggest project I have brewing is I'm in conversation with several people about the simple way to talk about it is a land project, but for me, really, it's a retirement project. Where do I want to spend out the second half of my life, I suppose. So it's probably still 5 years away, but it involves many people, and there's a lot of money involved, and there's lots of planning to do, and so we're starting to have regular meetings just to talk about it a few times a year.
And do you think that that you're doing this project in a way that's different than the traditional land project?
Well, I'm not. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that particular question. I haven't been in enough of these rooms. I do know that I am thinking about it, approaching it differently than I would have approached it 20 years ago. I don't feel like the reality or possibility is pie in the sky. I'm older. I have more resources. I have more relationships. I feel like I know what I want better now than I did then. But when I was younger, it was a a land project was a project of building and exploring and all the things that you ever wanted to do that you could now do in one place that was your own. And it's a little bit less that now. I'm not so interested in building my own house with my own hands. I'm not sure at this point in my life that I want to work that hard. I've got some carpal tunnel and I can feel the arthritis in my thumbs. And is that really what I want to do with my time? Whereas at 22, I would have led the charge. So it changes what you're thoughtful about. And I think there's a different reality check involved.
Do you think that this is a specifically anarchist project that you're working on?
No. My parents' generation are the generation of hippies that kind of mainstreamed the idea of back to the land projects, I think. So I don't think it's a particularly anarchist project. What makes it an anarchist project for me is being really intentional about the other people that are invited and making sure that the relationship we have and the way that we want to accomplish what we want to accomplish speaks to, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it, my values. Is a land project an anarchist project? No. Do I want this to be anarchists spearheading a land project? Yes. So there's something in there, but I'm not sure I have a good way to talk about it.
Oh, you're organizing it with other anarchists?
Yes.
Ah, and that doesn't make it an anarchist project?
I would say it does, yes. I guess I just want to be clear that the notion, the concept itself, is not inherently an anarchist thing.
But, you know, I think the goal of the topic of the week is to allow people to have an opportunity to express their particular answer to a question that, of course, you know, isn't a question for everybody. It's a question for you.
Sure.
Do you have any other anarchist projects that you're working on? In other words, that you're dreaming on for the future?
I have several that I'm dreaming, that I've been dreaming on and have been in conversation with people about. It got mentioned in the comments on the post, the idea of news and analysis from an anarchist perspective. Anarchists talk about the things that interest anarchists all the time, but I've always felt considered analysis on the things that are going on in the world around us was lacking. Actually talking about economics and current events and politics, and not politicians, mind you, but politics and global affairs and the way that these things weave into anarchists living anarchist lives.
Yeah, it just seems like the editorial quality that would be necessary to do that without basically chasing the tail of the mainstream media would be extremely challenging. I'm not sure how one would do it.
No, I think that's exactly it. I'm not sure how one would do it. And I'm not sure, and I'm pretty sure that to do it well, just setting that issue aside, it's just like any other news project, and it's got to be a full-time job or a part-time commitment of so many people to make up for the fact that it's only a part-time commitment. It would be a huge challenge to do it well. Especially if editorial weight and rigor were important.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, like, it would be wonderful to write a lot of analytical articles. I mean, you know, the trap and the success of CrimeThink is the fact that they, you know, continue to put out these very high quality articles. But, you know, I don't need to read anything by an anarchist about Trump.
Right, for sure. Subject matter matters.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, of course, you know, I've talked about doing a similar type of project, but the only way I feel like it would be reasonable to do it would be to pay some people. And that brings up challenges that I've yet to see threaded well.
Yes, that's true. It always gets complicated when money's involved.
My, current projects, are basically continuations of sort of larger projects. So, for instance, over the next month or so, I'm going to be thinking a lot about Black Seed 5. And since it's sort of a reset of that project, thinking a lot about what that means and what that looks like and what does it look like to get new and different people involved. And I'm also working on a book and I've completed sort of the bulk of the work of that book, but the probably the last 25% of what's necessary is going to be the hardest 25%, and that's me, you know, writing a 20,000-word introduction.
Wow. That's impressive.
Well, it's something. And it's the work, as I would say.
Yes, it is the work. It's good to hear that Black Seed is still alive and kicking.
Yeah. I'm going to continue to be excited about it for another 5 weeks. Until I can put it to bed, because it's taken a long time to come out.
I do want to point to a existing anarchist project that has been a model for me in lots of ways of kind of a big dream that I've had and never really seen realized. As you know, there's an anarchist reading group, a study group in Berkeley that's held every week. And one of the things that I always appreciated about it, or a series of things I always appreciated about it, was that over the years, while the people who attend fluctuate, it is generally more women than not, was generally of a large age range, multi-generational, and tendency, the particulars of your politics mostly were less important than your participation. And that set of variables were always ones that I wanted to kind of cut out and pick up and transplant to other projects, or, you know, I guess in a pie in the sky dream, a bigger project, I don't know what, a community, a homestead, a campaign, or I'm not sure what the language is, but to be able to weave all of those things together. I always wanted to have to be a part of a project that felt like it was bigger than me, and I felt like those were kind of the building blocks of that. And I've seen a couple instances of it attempted in the years that I've been around. But at the end of the day, the specifics of why are we here and what are we doing always end up seeming to tear people away from those central tenets, I suppose.
Yeah, I've always had the wild aspiration that something like a reading group would put together some sort of anarchist pedagogical texts to sort of talk about, you know, what does an anarchist way of thinking look like, you know, through 20 years of experience.
Yeah, nice.
I mean, the challenge is, how does one take away such a, you know, how does one ask that question outside of the academy? And, you know, what I love about anarchist projects and dreaming about anarchist projects is it's explicitly a not academic approach.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I sometimes am disappointed in the amount of that kind of discourse that happens outside of the grad students in our midst.
Well, thank you very much for participating in this conversation. It's nice to bring you back so that we have a consistent conversation going on.
It's nice to talk to you again. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you next week. This week, in lieu of going into deeper detail regarding the stories of the week, we have a special guest, and this is Paul Simons is passing through town, and we're going to talk about his recent adventures in Greece, and what his thoughts are on the week in news. Paul, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So you've just returned from Greece.
I have.
How was it?
It was amazing. It was fascinating to be in a community where there are so many anarchists doing so many anarchist things. So,
you wrote a couple pieces, and of course the Greek scene does not like to be talked about.
At all, yes. They're very security-oriented, and that includes being, when they list their list of like top priorities in terms of enemies, journalists are usually second or third on that list. So, yeah, absolutely.
And so you received mostly neutral feedback, or actually some positive? from people after they saw your postings?
After they saw the postings, I generally got some good feedback. A lot of people said, well, it wasn't exactly the way things went. I said, well, this is the way that I perceive them. So, I mean, there was no concern about security, which was my big concern in terms of stepping on their boundaries in terms of don't expose this, don't talk about that, that type of thing. So mm-hmm. I was comfortable with that. The actual critique was more like, gee, it reads, you know, it's kind of journalism, but it's also kind of like propaganda. And I said, well, it presents it from an anarchist point of view. If that's propaganda, I'm guilty. So other than that, it was pretty straightforward. They were happy with most of the material that came out. So yeah,
it was good. The news story that came out, I guess, after you left Greece, but that I was really concerned about and sort of didn't feel like I understood exactly what was going on, is that there was some, I guess, police raid against a couple of squats?
Correct. My understanding is that 100-plus migrants were arrested, as well as a number of anarchists. And the understanding there is that the migrant situation in Greece has really affected what's going on with the squatting movement, for the simple reason that the one thing that the Greek state can't provide appropriately is a safe place for people to live. And the anarchists in Athens, at least, and in other places too, but Athens particularly, have come forward and basically provided those safe spaces for individuals. So they also, I mean, the very existence of migrants, particularly in a place like Europe, has really caused a lot of, I mean, it's an excellent way to question the state, because they question two things that are fundamental to at least European statehood. The first is the ability to guarantee borders. I mean, states that can't secure their borders really aren't much in terms of states. And the second thing is that the kind of the social democratic social contract. In other words, you come here, we're going to let you live, we're going to provide food, clothing, housing for you, we will not let you starve. All that kind of goes by the wayside if we have a two-tiered approach to citizenship. In other words, one is we have, you know, these white European Danes or French or whatever, and then we have a second tier, which is migrants from Africa or the Middle East, and they don't get the same social contract as individuals who were born here. So it really calls into question some real fundamental assumptions about statehood, especially in Europe. I think that the Greek anarchists get this, and so to facilitate the process, they have acted as social places, they've acted as social support for people coming in. There is a phone tree that happens in Athens where if somebody's looking for a place, I mean, squats will be called, individuals will be placed, that type of thing. You know, and it's not on the basis of, you know, it really is kind of like just introducing yourself and saying, I just arrived in from Morocco or wherever, can you help me with the place? So there's no like background checks, or there's no ability to even verify who these people are, but they're taken in, you know, sight unseen usually. So it's very important. So with these raids, what we're seeing is that not only the police are getting back at the migrants, and likely these migrants were placed back into camps, and the camps are dangerous, they're ugly, camps are like significant sites for commercial sex work, significant sites for drug use, the mafias, the Afghanistani mafia, the different mafias that operate in Greece use them because, you know, they smuggle people back and forth across the border. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, these are direct attacks on what the anarchists have been doing. And it's surprising that only two squats were attacked as opposed to several, because including the squat that I was in, you know, most squats will have some level of migrant census within them. So
I think when people hear about the Greek environment, the Greek anarchist space, it sounds like not just a foreign country, but like an alien planet.
Right.
Especially in the context of North America, where even in the Bay Area, where ostensibly anarchists are strongest, we couldn't be weaker. Especially in the context of like a social struggle or even meaningful relationships with each other.
Right.
What would be the two lessons that you would say are the most transferable from the Greek context to the North American context?
First, and this is one I think that people have already started to take on, like in Portland and in Denver, is the idea of the assembly, getting people together, getting them talking. You know, when I spoke to comrades in Greece over and over again, the one thing that they pointed to was the fact that the assemblies are key. As a matter of fact, the Polytechnic, the university that's very close to Exarchia, it has a building that's effectively run by anarchists, and that building is primarily used for assemblies, and they can be assemblies for everything from the war in Syria to you know, issues around Exarchia, to issues around migrancy, that type of thing. So the ability to sit in a place where a number of anarchists or like-minded people are gathering and to be able to speak your mind, that is essential to them. They really see that as fundamental to making people into anarchists.
Well, just to expand on that question in the North American context,
right?
In the U.S., to get to an assembly that would be in a central neighborhood in the U.S. would probably require driving or people who are geographically dispersed to find a way to find a location to meet together.
Correct.
On top of that, that distance and the internet have made American anarchists very distrustful of each other.
Right.
How would we resolve those two big barriers that the Greeks don't have?
I think the one thing that, I mean, the second part of the lesson may address that as well. The one thing that the Greeks stressed is that, you know, if you take these assemblies seriously, then you have to do not just one assembly, but two. The first one is you have a group of anarchists who are going to go to a public assembly, which may be inhabited by Republicans or Democrats or Social Democrats or whatever, and the anarchists talk about what they're going to present. They interact with each other at the level of anarchist, and that way all the different groups that are involved, all the different affinity groups or teams or whatever, know what's on everybody else's mind. They may not agree with it, but at least they've hashed out kind of like what their priorities are. The second piece of that is it also allows new people who are just in the process of learning about anarchism to be able to flex their muscles a little bit, to speak in one of those assemblies, knowing that they're not going to be criticized to death and knowing that they're not going to be brutalized by the assembly. So it kind of trains younger anarchists. It also, I mean, in terms of travel, that type of thing, ideally these assemblies are going to be happening close enough, like in urban areas, such that people can walk, they can get there some way. The rural issues, I think that is going to have to be solved case by case, piece by piece. But again, it's somebody asking for a ride from someone else, which in and of itself, for American anarchists, is not bad. And I think you're right. I think that the internet has had, you know, very positive aspects on American anarchism. It's also had extremely detrimental effects. And I think one of the effects has been that a lot of anarchists sit in their basement and are anarchists there. And then when they come out of their basement, they become person X again, you know, another citizen engaged with, you know, America. They may not vote, they may not pay taxes, they may voice extremely unpopular views, but they're not being anarchists. The one thing that in Greece that you find is that people are anarchists 24 hours a day. It's not an identity that they take on when they sit down at the computer screen. It's something that they do over time. So, I mean, initially, these assemblies should start small. They should be close. They should be where people can get to them. Later on, if they get larger, as they federate, that becomes an issue of travel, and then people are going to have to work through that specific issue because America is so large. So
yeah, fast. I can imagine a listener to this, though, sort of would ask themselves, what's the critical mass on anything like this happening where it would feel like it was more important to be there than to not be there? So, you know, for me, it's like, to relate it to the reading group, where when you have less than 8 people at the reading group, right, it feels like not enough. Like, not enough different types of opinions are going to be shared. Right. Like this isn't necessarily a fighting force.
Right.
And I'm curious, I mean, Greece really is, you know, it still has a culture of social, open social life. It still has a culture of people don't sit in their homes at night watching Netflix. What was the smallest assembly that you were able to?
Well, in the squat that I was at, there was an assembly once a week on Sunday nights, and that was attended between 5 and 15 people, and people would move in and out, you know, as things were discussed, that type of thing. So it's also not only how many people are there, but also what they're taking on. I think that Portland has been real key in terms of looking at what at least their initial anarchist assembly was, which their assumption was very interesting, which was at some point in time, we are going to be called upon to run Portland, to take responsibility for everything that Portland requires as a city. And that is where our initial emphasis and priorities are. In other words, we need to talk about mutual defense, we need to talk about water, about garbage removal, that type of thing. They have not gotten around to significant portions of that yet, but they see themselves as, when the state is driven back into wherever the state came from, they're going to be the ones who are left standing, and it's going to be their responsibility to take on currently what the state does, but without the existence of a state.
So you're describing Portland's assembly as having an interest in dual power.
Correct.
And so in that context, then this park phenomenon grows out of that. I had thought that assembly was sort of called to order to respond to Trump.
There are two Portland assemblies. One is kind of the liberal in response to Trump, and then there's the other one, which is the anarchists who are meeting, who are more aligned with, you know, the dual power thing. I should say that it reflects back onto Greece. There's a number of assemblies that are claiming to be responsible for the area around Exarchia. One of them is associated with Syriza, the ruling party. You know, it's attended by primarily merchants in the area. It has very different priorities from this other group called the Assembly for the Reappropriation of Exarchia, which is mostly squatters, mostly anarchists. And again, they're the ones who are trying to throw the mafia out. They're the ones who are trying to deal with some of the basic day-to-day issues of Exarchia as an urban landmark, as a place within the urban landscape. So, you know, two different assemblies, two different types of emphasis, two different priorities in terms of what they see their role as. One is to build the power of the state. Quite seriously, you know, Syriza. And you may take the Portland Assembly, the liberal one, as kind of like, well, trying to reassert the priority or the priorities associated with the Democratic Party and, you know, that type of thing, you know, the equality. And then the other one is this anarchist assembly, which is seeking to ultimately to not take control, but to be responsible for the administration of Portland in the same way that the Committee for the Reappropriation of Exarchia would very much like to take responsibility for, you know, public safety, public health, everything associated with that specific area in Athens.
So I asked a question, are there two things that could come over from Greece to the North American context? So assemblies is number one. What's number two?
Number two would be the one thing that they castigate us for, and it's aligned with assemblies, is the loss of a common space, an area where we can gather in the open as anarchists, that we have no, you know, there's no police oversight. They really see, and I saw this happen actually in New York with Tompkins Square Park, where it was a place where admittedly anarchists weren't paramount in terms of what was happening there, but there was very little police presence. We had a common place that we could go any time of the day or night. We used it for meetings. We slept there. We had demonstrations there. That loss, and that was a specific loss because that was what the riot in 1988 was about, that loss of that common space clearly affected the ability of anarchists to organize, to meet each other, to be engaged with the community, that type of thing. So I think that a reappropriation, or at least a reappraisal of how do we gain the commons back? How do we put a piece of the urban environment or a piece of the rural environment into our pockets again so that it becomes our space? And the importance of that, again, we had talked about this before, you know, even wheat pasting, which in the U.S., you know, used to be legal and used to be one of the ways that we communicated with each other, at least in New York. Even in the U.S. now, if you wheat paste in New York City, say, you can have significant fines for wheat pasting. And in Exarchia, as an example, one of the ways that people communicate with each other, a fundamental way that you announce a party, a demo, an issue that pisses you off, a new squat, is that you go around at 10 o'clock at night with a bucket of wheat paste and some flyers, and you post them up. And people walk by, you'll see it, and they'll go, oh, look, it's a party on the 22nd, we should go, you know, that type of thing. So even the loss of that, which is implied by the existence of a common space, is gone to us, is lost to us. So now we're left with the internet. We're left with alternative ways to be able to communicate, contact each other.
Yeah, when we came back from Greece five or six years ago, we were very excited about their public space, and we attempted, you know, we actually have the privilege of living in Berkeley that has literally a liberated public space.
Right.
And we tried for about 3 months to hold a weekly assembly at People's Park, but we never got beyond more or less a picnic. And, you know, that's a sort of great challenge that I'm not sure how to resolve in any other way.
Right.
And since that time, you know, I think there's been a large exodus of anarchists from the Bay Area, and I would have even less hope that if we were to start again.
It's interesting. It also, to riff on the Apelles for a minute, you know, one of the things in France that they're doing are these banquets, which is clearly they're playing on the idea of the political banquet that happened, say, between 1845 and 1848, you know, which is they would get together, and the big point of the banquet was the toast, you know, screw the state, we're going to take over at some point in time, that type of thing. And they were, I mean, banquets were declared illegal at one point in time, you know. So the Apelles have been trying to reappropriate that idea where they're bringing people together. They're feeding them, giving them wine or beer and talking a lot. They haven't really reappropriated everything. In other words, they're not doing these grand toasts that they would do at the end. But the idea of, again, putting together a common space and doing it in the context of a political meeting, I think is one of the things that we may, I mean, summer's coming. It's something that now with Trump in office, that may become one of the ways that we communicate not only with each other, but also with the community, you know, bring them in, provide food. And we should, you know, food, not bombs is an example of the type of thing potentially we could do. But in this instance, not feeding homeless people, but feeding people who have no politics.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this week's E-News podcast. To learn more about anarchism in particular, anarchy101.org for books and other anarchist material, littleblackcart.com. For news and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org, email us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. Thanks to Lynn O'Mabel for the sound editing work, and for Ariel for participating in the topic of the week conversation, and of course, Paul Z. Simons for our conversation about Greece and beyond.